Session number 14252, Mr. Frederick Perkins, Reel 1.
Whereabouts were you born, please?
In a little village called Tongham, Surrey, adjacent to the town of Aldershot.
What did your father do for a living?
My first father was in the army. He was a corporal groom in the Royal Engineers.
Did you go to school in Tongham?
Yes, I did, in a little tiny village school.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
14 years of age.
So which year was that? 35?
It would have been about 30 years, something like, something, no, later than that, I would have thought.
Which year were you born?
2nd of December 1923.
So, yes, it would have been 28 then, about 38 rather.
Just before the war started, actually, yeah, 38, yeah. I was already working when the war started.
What job did you get?
I was a nurseryman.
When you heard the news that we were at war with Germany, how did you react to that?
Well, first off, I suppose we all thought it would be exciting, to say the least. It was going to be a whole new, different thing than what we'd been used to, of course, a peace. And everybody was a little apprehensive, I suppose, you'd say, to us, what would happen to us. Of course, in the early years of that war, it didn't seem a war, it was a phony war, wasn't it? One did things that you wouldn't normally do in a wartime.
Such as?
Well, I mean, you would probably light bonfires in the garden and things like that, which you wouldn't normally have done, would you, in a war situation. But then, that through the phony war, we were taking liberties, really.
Were you in any of the early bombing of Britain by the German Air Force?
Well, yes, we were. At the little village at Tongham, where I was born, they did drop bombs on the village. In fact, probably 1941, they did actually hit an ammunition train standing in the siding, in the sidings of the tiny little village. The railway ran through the village to a stop end before it got into Farnham, and the ammunition trucks were standing along in the open country part of the village, and they were struck by incendiaries and they started to explode all over the village. In that instance then, the local scoutmaster and his friend were both shunters. One was the foreman, the scoutmaster, the foreman shunter, and he aroused his friend. And between them, they crept along the track and unhooked six carriages, blazing carriages, with their shunting poles and moved them away from the rest of the train. In fact, later on, they did both get the George Medal in that incident. And of course, bombs were dropped around the village whilst that was going on. Some hit one of the local estates in the village, actually. And there were some unexploded bombs around the village, too. But Aldershot, in the main, didn't have many bombs. There was one attack where some got killed, but that was mainly all that Aldershot ever had in the bombing. But the aircraft used to come across this area to bomb London and, you know, and other places on the, up and towards London, Weybridge. Brings to mind my memory, the aircraft works at Weybridge where the Wellington bomb was made. They attacked the factory whilst they were all coming out for dinner, and a lot of people got killed because they were coming out from dinner, and they actually dropped bombs on the main entrance in the Vickers Weybridge works, Woking, or Weybridge, yeah.
How much did you see of this bombing of Tongham?
I was down in the village the night of the train was attacked, and then after a while, when everybody realised it was the ammunition that was going off, that they expected a bigger disaster because there was TNT on one end of the train, and that if that had been it, I think it would have cleared the village completely. But heroically, those men that shifted that saved the village, and there's no doubt about that. And Then the police moved us off into back to our homes. I lived a little bit out of the village actually, and we were sent home away from the village. That was about 1941. That was before I was called up.
Was anybody injured?
No, I don't think so. No, no. Remarkable, really.
How did you come to be in the army yourself?
Well, I was had my medical in the early part, probably 1 month before I was actually called into the army, and I was actually called in June 42, and had a quick medical, and then we were in within 1 month. And I was called up in the barracks to an infantry training centre at Reading.
This is June 1942, apparently.
June 1942, yeah.
How did you feel about the call-up?
Well, I didn't like it very much, but I suppose we all had to go, really.
How did they treat you in the initial training?
Pretty hard, really. At that time I was called up, we were doing 16 weeks infantry training. Later on, people only did 6 weeks. But we actually did 16 weeks at the number 16th ITC, the Royal Berkshire Regiment, at Brock Barracks, Reading. So in actual fact, we went straight into a regiment, which later on, people went into a general service corps and then got posted. But we actually went straight into the 5th Royal Berks.
Can you tell me about the battalion?
They were a very good battalion. They served in all theatres of war. They were serving in Burma at the time, of course, and they had great difficulties in Burma. The 1st and 2nd battalions, I think the 10th were abroad somewhere, and later on the 10th was in Italy. The 4th battalion were evacuated at Dunkirk, and they had a pretty good history of the Royal Berkshire Regiment of battle honours. One brings to mind the Battle of May Wand, which is in the annals of the Royal Berkshire's history.
But the 5th Royal Berks, what kind of men were in
what,
it?
What kind of men? Yes, they were nicknamed the 5th Hackney Battalion, Royal Berkshire Regiment. They were a Hackney TA. They were originally the 10th London TA. And they were stationed, well, their drill hall was actually in Hackney. Now, they recruited members for that regiment, for that particular TA, from areas like Bethnal Green, Battersea, Poplar, all the areas of London, Balham, I think they got a lot from, and they were all Londoners actually, I wasn't, but they were all Londoners. And that is, they got the nickname then, the 5th Hackney Battalion, Gurkha, Hackney Gurkhas. And they got this because a lot of the members that were called up were fairly undernourished people. You know, the back streets of London, not fed properly, didn't have much weight about them. Scrawny looking lads we were, you know. And that's how we got this nickname, the Gurkhas.
Because of your small size.
The Hackney Gurkhas, yeah. We were rather small, yeah.
Were you accepted as someone from outside London?
I was, yes, yes. Oh, readily, yeah. Yeah.
And you were in Britain for 2 years then?
Yes.
Before you went abroad?
Yeah, we finished our training and we did various other training. We did training with tanks, in a battalion attacks with tanks in Thetford Forest. We spent some time down there. And all this time we were stationed in a little place called Aldborough in Suffolk. Now, Aldborough in Suffolk is a sort of a village-type town, if you call it, and it's right on the seafront. And whilst we were there, we were doing beach defence of that area because we were expecting the Germans to land in Britain there. So we were a defensive battalion then.
What did you think of the beach defences if the Germans had landed?
We didn't have a lot, really, just a battalion on the sand dunes, really, and a few anti-tank guns and a few mortars and machine guns, and basically that was it. There was one or two pillboxes about. We thought, well, if they come, that they will get in anyway. We were pretty convinced that they would get ashore, because we were really fairly ill-equipped, really, after Dunkirk. And the British Army was only just getting back on its feet, really. So they could have made a landing there possibly quite easily. All along the Suffolk coast, to Thorpe Ness, to Felixstowe, they could have got in there any time. So, but then came the call, when the Germans had attacked the Russians, and were pushing very deep into Russia, and the Russians knew that they were going to carry out an offensive, and they had started their offensive, and they wanted a second front. And it was decided that we would do a second front in Normandy, or in France. And we were then sent as a battalion to Scotland to do combined ops training. Combined ops with a view that we were going to be a beach group to the 3rd Canadian Division. And there we specialised in methods of unloading landing craft, all kinds of vessels. We learnt docks operating skills, ropes, all kinds of things. How to handle all this material with safety, without accidents. We were trained in winch work, all kinds of things. And we were an infantry A1 fit battalion. And they decided that we were selected for this because when they landed in Anzio, the beach groups were mainly pioneers. And they found that they were not fit enough men to do the job. They were downgraded men, so they wanted graded, you know, A1 men to do this kind of work that would be feverish, to say the least, when we did land.
What is the role of a beach group?
The role of a beach group, a primary role the first day was we had to land with the initial assault with the 3rd Canadian Division, and then set up protection of that beach to make way all the tank exits, markers, beach markers, minefield tapes, all these kind of jobs we had to train for, so that when the landing took place, everything went smoothly, absolutely smoothly. Nothing was left to chance at all on the landing. The smallest detail was looked into, and we would train for it. And in fact, I had some members here yesterday who we were selected, four of us, to go to Norfolk to take beach soundings of the beaches in Norfolk, because they were similar to Normandy. Some of the beaches there were similar in sand structure. And we went there doing sand structure courses to find out. When we got there, we could take samples and say, yes, here's a place where we could have a beach exit. Let's get this set up, and away we go. And all this involved training of one sort or another. A handling of materials, that was another type of training we did. You know, physical training instructors would instruct us how to lift barrels, shells, boxes, all kind of things, so that we didn't have back stress, all these kind of things. And we could handle it quickly and efficiently without accidents. The heaviest weight we used to lift was probably a 100-pound shell. And over that, it was a machine-made job then to do that. We handled bridging, which was a 6-man load, lifted together. And all of it had to be worked out so that different companies were doing different types of jobs. And that's the essence of a beach group. Each man got his particular job. Don't matter if he's a private soldier, he's got a specific job, a role to play on a beach landing.
Were there any accidents in the training in Scotland?
There was no. We had some accidents in Suffolk when we were doing battle training. In fact, I was involved in one major mortar accident, and a bomb burst in the barrel of a 2-inch mortar, HE, and it killed 4 men and injured 13. And I escaped. I couldn't have been any more than 8 yards from the actual burst, ready to fire the next section to fire on the firing point. And it was a tragic day, really, because it took us 2 hours to get any outside assistance, ambulances to the men. Because of the minefields down in Suffolk, they were very wary about coming to pick these men up that was injured. We were in a battle training area, and we knew the access to that training area, but other people didn't know that, you know, ambulances and that kind of thing. But it was a really bad, nasty accident, and accident did happen, yes, and very much so. All kinds of accidents.
But this combined operations training that you did in Scotland, do you think that you were well prepared?
Yes, I think we were, yes. We listened very intently to what we were told. You just had to do, you know, because when you're landing off landing craft, there are things you do and things that you don't do.
Such as?
Well, more specifically, when we used to come off of LCAs, as one accident happened, when it got into the beach, the ramp went down and everybody ran off the front of the ramp, and then suddenly there was a swell and the craft would move forward and it would go over a man if he was on the end of the ramp. It would just roll over the top of him. A wave would lift the craft further inshore. So we always used to say, let's jump out the side of the ramp, so that if the men then were at one side of the craft. We'd learnt all those kind of things, you know, trial and error, really.
How long were you doing the training in Scotland for?
Well, I should think we went up there the very early part of 1943. And we trained in two specific areas. Troon, the golf course at Troon, the championship golf course, where there was a camp in the middle of the golf course, and we used that as our base. And then we used the whole of the Troon beach area right down towards Ayr. And then on the other side of the coast, the Midlothian side, we used the area, again another championship course, Gullain, to Haddington. And there we devised ways and means of getting these stores ashore as quick as possible. We'd have coasters come in, and we had to see if we can get rid of these coasters in 12 hours. Now, the battalion was split up into companies, A Company, B Company. I know A Company, we were involved in stores and troops management. B Company on another job, they were stores as well. Then we'd have another company that was Docks Operating Company. And another company then was forward ammunition area parties, forward store areas. They used to manage the stores in the forward areas and ply backwards and forwards to the beach unloading areas.
You were in A Company, were you?
A Company, yeah.
Were you a private?
Yes, yeah.
And the next thing that happened?
Well, we did this particular specialised training, and then they said, right, we're going down now to the south of England. This was getting on way into, it was probably Christmas, just after Christmas. And we had to do three major schemes with the 3rd Canadian Division. That's where we first then met the Canadians, really, in those particular areas. And we had to do beach landings with them, the whole division landing all at once under live firing conditions. And one of the places we did, the first place we did this to, was Studholm Bay in Dorset. That was a live firing area with all the divisional artillery firing inshore, and the whole division firing in through Studland Bay. And alas, we did one particular scheme there where we landed in a force four gale. And some of us was dispatched into the water at 9 feet deep. And not many of us could swim properly. So it was a bit of a hectic day when we did that particular exercise. There were nasty happenings, you know, of men getting swept ashore rather than wade ashore. They were getting picked up and thrown on the beach by the sea. And while all this was going on, it has to be said that the Navy, we would go out training on small craft, and we'd go out when we were in Scotland. We'll go back to Scotland now. There was a little port there called Irvine. And we would get on LCAs and we'd go out about 2 miles and go along the coast and make a landing in at the Troon beach areas. So really, nobody, no sailors, ever went out much more than 5 miles out. So they were in coastal waters, which were nearly always slack waters. You know, they were not raging torrents. Of course, later on, we experienced the deep when on the D-Day lands itself. I mean, the seas were horrendous. Sailors were sick. They'd never experienced it before. They'd never really put to sea, only on the coastal waters. So, and even on the Sutherland Bay exercises, we went from places like Southampton, just out the waters, and round in the Dorset coast and landed there. So we never really got out to sea, not to say you were right out in mid-channel, like, you know. So we were used to the sea not being so rough, really. So the that was all training, really. That benefited us later on towards the D-Day landings, you know. And then we made some exercise Fabius 2. Fabius 1 was Studland, Fabius 2 was Brackelsham Bay, Fabius 3 was Wittering. And while we used these places, Wittering and Brackelsham Bay, we were actually landing the funnies, the funny tanks, the flails, the crocodiles, the tanks with bridging on them, tanks with great rolls of wooden babbins that they dropped in ditches and just went straight over the top of them. And all those kind of funnies were brought in at Brackelsham Bay. And as soon as they arrived, they had to be covered over with canvas sheets so that the public couldn't see them. The public were actually ordered to have all their blinds drawn. And nobody, if they had to go to work, they had to be gone to work before the exercise started, or put indoors, not allowed to see what was happening, because it was all top secret, the funnies. We had to practice with them, the flail tanks, the DD tank, the duplex drives, the swimmer tanks, they came in as well. No one knew what, even us infantry didn't know what the DD tanks were. So when we saw them, we thought, you know, what is this, you know, this monster's coming out of the sea, tank swimming. We couldn't believe it, really. Through that exercise, it all worked out.
And then the actual preparation for D-Day itself, did you go into a confinement area?
Yeah, well, we all around the course of the South Coast, it was the South Coast was just unimaginable, really. There was so many lorries, so many men, all assembled in an area, say from Dover, right the way through to Devon, to Slapton Sands, and further on than that even, to Torquay, Brixham. It was just one vast marshalling area of men and materials. They, all the way along in the town of Borden, for instance, where the Canadians were predominantly stationed, tanks just were parked all the way along the roads, under cover of the trees. Marshalling areas were set up, which again was a part training. Staff had to man all these transit camps. And we did a lot of exercises between the main landing exercises where we would go out on lorries and we would then go into a transit camp. The whole battalion would go into a transit camp. We were given food, blanket, a tent and a bed. And we'd be there about an hour, two hours I suppose, time we fed. And then they'd say, right, back on the lorries. And all that was a training exercise for the transit area people managing the camps to know how to handle men and men quickly. So it was all one vast practice for the real thing. I remember some of the camps were manned by conscientious objectors in some of the camps. They actually put them to work running the camps. Fair enough, isn't it?
Was there any ill feeling between the two sides?
Well, we used to think, you know, why are we doing this and they've got this cushy number. But no, I don't think not really, no. I mean, a man is entitled not to fight, to take up arms, so we took it that way, you know. At least we were designed to do a specific job when we got on with that, really.
So you thought it, but you didn't say it?
We thought it, but didn't say it, no. Yeah. Then of course, these marshalling areas, they were very adjacent to some of the ports, you know, Portsmouth, Southampton. I myself was in a transit area before we went on D-Day in a place called Creechwalk Camp at Waterlooville. As you went towards Portsmouth from Borden, it lay to the left of Waterlooville. We were in a pine forest, and the tents were pitched in the pine forest. You couldn't see them from the air, really. And there were thousands of these camps around, it seemed. All the handling, different divisions. Then we were trained, also, to waterproof all our lorries, which used to take 4 days to waterproof a lorry. A three-tonner took 4 days to waterproof a lorry. All the carriers had to be waterproofed because these things were going to come off the ramps of LCTs and go straight down in the water and then ride along the seabed and out the water. And incredible to think of that, isn't it? That they could do such a thing. And so there was that kind of training. We went on street fighting schools where we had to learn the techniques of street fighting, getting from one building to another without going out onto the street. Bashing a hole through the wall with a pick, crawl through that wall into one room and then into another and then into another. And all this kind of training was part of a general infantry training.
Did you have much to do with Canadian troops before you went across?
Only when we come into the marshalling areas down towards the ports. I would say around about April, the landing being in June, around about April we stand to get good contact with the Canadians. And then we saw them in the camps, you know, the transit camps, and we were fed by them. We made friends of the Canadians, and they knew us as their beach group.
What's important?